Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 184, I chat with re-recording mixers Marty Humphrey and Chris Jacobson about Oro 3D Audio. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by Cashfly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded November 25th, 2013. Episode 184, Oro 3D Audio. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere on your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Visit HuluPlus.com/HTG to start your free 2-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/HTG. And by Tonks Coffee. Tonks offers a bi-weekly subscription. Tonks sources their beans directly from the growers. They're roasted and shipped within 24 hours, giving you the freshest coffee beans in the world. For a free sample, visit tonks.org/HTG. That's tonks.org/HTG. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the Home Theater Geek and Director of Content at avsforum.com. This week, I am pleased to welcome two guest geeks to the show. Marty Humphrey, the president and a re-recording mixer at the Dub Stage. Hey, Marty, welcome to the show.
Hello there, Scott.
And also his associate, Chris Jacobson, also a re-recording mixer and sound designer who works at the Dub Stage. Hey, Chris, glad to have you here. Hey. So those of you who are tuned in live at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv, can post questions for Marty and Chris, and I'll pass along as many as I can. So both of you have the title re-recording mixer. And this term re-recording has always confused me a little bit. It's like, well, what are you re-recording? You've recorded something and then you're re-recording it? Or what exactly is a re-recording mixer? What do they do? Marty, why don't you start us off?
That's a good question, Scott. That comes from the days when we had tape. And we had all the elements on tape, and we were recording to another tape machine, be it a mag machine or a multitrack, and that's where the term re-recording came into play.
Ah, and of course now we don't use tape. I mean, does anybody use tape anymore?
Very few. It's very hard to get, and there really isn't any more sonic advantages to it.
Right. So we're really talking digital, but the name stuck, as it so often does in this business, an archaic name for something that you do now with totally different tools. And Chris, you're also a sound designer. Why don't you give us a little outline of what that job entails?
Well, there's many jobs in post-production for sound for film and television. There's various forms of editing, sound effects, sound design. Sound design generally means creating sounds from scratch for something that you see on screen, maybe something we haven't heard before, something that's made up, spaceships or laser guns or whatever. But it can be very subtle things as well, just creating the perfect door close that gives a mood to a scene or punctuates a scene and so on.
Right. So it's a pretty creative job. You're also a musician, aren't you, Chris?
Sometimes. Used to be. I don't play as much anymore, but...
Yeah, I'm afraid I know that story.
Took over my life,
Yeah, I'm sure that's true.
He's very, very talented, by the way. Very, very talented.
I have no doubt of that. I've certainly heard some of the results in the demo that I saw at your studio, and that's really why I wanted you on the show, was that you invited me over to your studio, which is mere blocks from my house, which is great, to hear a demonstration of a 3D sound system called Oro. And we're going to talk quite a bit about Oro. But before we do, I wanted to ask you, I noticed in the photographs that you have on your website, there are a couple of Emmys, which are proudly displayed. What'd you get those for?
I've been a re-recording mixer for the last 34 years. And I started off years ago, actually in 1980, and mixing everything myself. In other words, I did dialogue, music, effects, and mixed it all together. Later on, I went and got a job over at, back in 1991, a job at Sony Pictures sound department. And at Sony Pictures, I was working in television mainly at the time. And I was mixing a show called Mad About You with Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt. And I've been mixing surround. My first surround gig was back in 1982. And I fell in love with it back then. And then when I moved over to Sony, every show that I did on television, we ended up mixing in surround. And the Mad About You episodes that I won two Emmys for were one of the very first shows that were done on a weekly basis in surround.
Ah, so that's a perfectly worthwhile reason to award Emmys would be this technological advance moving from stereo to mixing in surround, which now I believe virtually all TV is done, right?
That's true. That is true.
Yeah, yeah. What are some of the productions that the dub stage where you work now? Well, first of all, let me ask you, when did you start your own post-production house called the Dub Stage?
I started my own company in about 2001, and Chris and I started working together when I built the facility in 2004. And we've been working together ever since, which is kind of a rarity in this town because most teams have a tendency to work a few years together or even shorter and then split up. But Chris laughs at all my jokes. He's incredibly talented, and we just can't, you know, we just enjoy working together.
Yeah, well, that's just great. Chris, what are some of the titles that you guys have worked on that people might know?
Sure. Going back to a few years ago, we did Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell, a horror film, which was very fun to work on. And after that, we worked with him again on Oz the Great and Powerful late last year. Mm-hmm. There's other projects, as you can see on the shot there, that we've worked on as well. Some with other recording mixers coming in and helping out. And I've also worked at Sony and on some projects as well, either doing sound effects editing or other jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That should give you a short idea anyway of what we do.
Sure, sure. Well, you guys are very busy, and I'm certainly glad that you were able to carve out an hour of time today to talk to me and to all of us. So the re-recording mixer takes all the various elements of the soundtrack, which would include dialogue, sound effects, music. Am I leaving anything out?
Yeah, if we could kind of give you a basis of how Chris and I work. I handle dialogue, ADRs, which is the replacement of production dialogue, and music. And Chris handles sound effects, sound design, Foley, and backgrounds. And the sum of that is what you hear coming through the speakers is when we merge everything together and balance each other, balance our elements against each other's track. And that's what the art of re-recording is.
Now, you told me when we met that the, I think it was Oz the Great and Powerful had over 1,200 separate audio elements. Is that correct?
Yeah. In that, we had 165 tracks of dialogue, ADR, and group. We had 435 tracks of music. Chris had 500 tracks of sound effects, and then 200 tracks of sound design, Foley, and background. So it was over 1,200 tracks. And what's unique about it is that it was all virtual. In other words, we do things so that we have access to all the elements within Pro Tools that we can go ahead and utilize. And that's one of the reasons why when we're working with somebody like Sam Raimi, who enjoys the ability to adjust anything without any restraints, and it really works out well.
Yeah, that's it. It does. I saw Oz the Great and Powerful, and certainly the sound of that movie was so integral to the entire movie, as it is in virtually all cases. I mean, I've heard mm-hmm. it said many times that audio is at least 50% of the movie experience. They say home theater experience, but I would extend that to commercial cinema as well. And I imagine sure. you guys would agree.
Mm-hmm. Sure, definitely. Absolutely.
And so we get to the point now where we've come to, Marty, you said you were mentioning how you did the surround mix, 5.1 mix for one of the first TV shows to do that on a regular basis. Of course, it's common in home theater now, and television shows and movies, 5.1 and 7.1. But we're now moving beyond that into what we might generically call immersive audio or 3D audio. So how has that come about? What has been the evolution of audio, and why has it now gone to this immersive or 3D audio idea that is becoming something that people can actually experience?
Well, I think it's a bit with technology and looking for sonically to take it to the next level. The nice thing is that there's two competing products out there which really make each other raise the bar of what you can achieve within sound in the theaters. And ultimately, going down the road, I feel that it's going to make itself to home, to the home, and to even headsets and what have you, mobile devices and everything like that. We're in the infant stages of it with both Oro 3D and Dolby Atmos. We have the technology. There's a limited amount of theaters out there. And the studios come to us and say, okay, how many theaters do you have in this format? And then the theaters say, how many movies do you have in this format? So it's a little bit of the chicken and the egg here. But it's growing, and it's truly, I think, really raises the bar for sound and what we can achieve. And there's no doubt about it, it's the future. Recently, Chris and I were at the Audio Engineering Society speaking on the panel. And in between speaking on panels, we went to another seminar, and it was about the future of 4K TV. And one of the things that they brought up is that it will have immersive sound with the new 4K delivery. Even though that's a few years away, they've already put that into plan to go ahead and have immersive sound delivered to the home. So I think that really bodes itself well for what the future of immersive sound is.
I agree. I've heard some people in the 4K TV space talk about 22.2 channel audio.
Well, that's the NHK format, and I think that would, you know, that's fine. You know, for example, we just recently mixed a piece in 30.1, but to deliver a weekly television show in 22.1, I think is challenging with today's tight budgets and obviously a time frame to go ahead and do it in. What we saw at the AES panel was it was a 5.1 bed, which is something that we're all familiar with, and just about every mixer in town is mixed in 5.1 when it comes to television, with four upper channels above the upper left screen, upper right screen, and two in the rear, almost like a quad on top of a 5.1. I think with that type of delivery and the bandwidth allocated for that, utilizing the tools that we have, and I think we'll see an adoption for that very, very, you know, everybody will gladly move on to that if the time and the budgets are allowed.
Mm-hmm. Jim Jam in the chat room is asking, is 3D audio for movies only, or will TV and sports see 3D audio? I could imagine 3D audio in a sports thing to hear the sound of the crowd behind you and above you, perhaps in the stadium. What do you think?
I see that with, just like I mentioned in 9.0 or 9.1, with having the crowds behind you and up and above you, I think it'll be a little bit more than we have in our sound palette to utilize for a tool.
And of course, as I said earlier, there's also the spousal acceptance factor of having yet more speakers in the room, which is always interesting. So you've talked about the two major players in this 3D audio system. You've mentioned them anyway, Dolby Atmos, which we've talked about on the show before, and Oro, A-U-R-O, which is often called Barco Oro. Barco is a maker of digital cinema projectors. So how are they involved in this 3D immersive audio system?
It's a great question. Barco is based in Belgium. Wilfred Van Beeling, the owner of Galaxy Studios, who designed and came up with Oro 3D, also is in Belgium. And between Barco and Oro got together and discussed the potential alignment of having Barco distribute the Oro products within the theater, since Barco has a major base in theaters with their projector sales and everything like that. So they licensed, Barco licensed the Oro technology to utilize in the theaters. and kind of piggyback it or allow it to be brought to the forefront with all their contacts of the theater chain owners and operators. And so they license strictly the Oro technology for theaters. I think it's a wonderful marriage. Barco makes some fine products. They're on the forefront of bringing new technology to theaters. And this is just an extension of that.
We got a question in the chat room earlier before we actually started the show, and I wanted to make sure we talked about it, which is, will 3D audio be a dud like 3D TV?
It's a good question. I think there, what we found with a lot of 3D technology is that people were not shooting it in 3D for the visuals, but they were going ahead and taking a
post-conversion.
2D...
Exactly, yeah, Chris, converting it in post-production, yeah.
And I think a lot of people didn't like what they saw, what they felt wasn't quite true to the artistic intent, and it was just a rush out to the theaters to get it out there. Although, for example, in Oz the Great and Powerful, Sam Raimi shot it in 3D with Red Epic cameras, two of them, in what they call stereo, and mm-hmm. it was amazing. When we went to the premiere and saw it in 3D, it was the best 3D I'd seen to date, and it was quite impressive. Unfortunately, it became a buzzword. Every movie went out and was shot in it, whether they needed it or not. And hopefully the dust is settled and the appropriate movies will be made in 3D visually. And 3D audio of either of the two formats out there, I think really complements what happens on the screen. Obviously, we utilize the Oro 3D process and feel it's the best, gives us the best ability to go ahead and manipulate the soundtrack that fits within our workflow. And I think it's also the best immersive product that's out there.
I personally think that 3D is having a hard time because they're just forcing so much product out there and not all of it shot natively. And they're charging extra for it. They're charging a lot of money for 3D. And we're also seeing that now with Oro and Atmos, they're attaching that to the 3D showing when it doesn't have to be necessarily. 3D immersive sound works great with a 2D image as well. So I don't see any reason why that can't go together.
Right, exactly. I was going to ask you that before, whether or not you mentioned how 3D audio goes great with 3D video, but it doesn't have to be with 3D video. It could just be with 2D, and it still gives you a greater sense of immersion. It's called immersive audio for a reason. And I think it can work with both. Not only that, you don't need to wear anything special to experience it, unlike 3D video where you got to wear those damn glasses.
Yeah.
I think there's something could be said for that. I think people want to sit down and enjoy the movie, be brought into an environment that you can't hear anywhere else as it stands right now, and put people back in the theater to enjoy the theater experience and really be taken to something sonically that they're not used to of ever hearing before. And I think it does it very successfully.
Yeah. Now, can either of you sort of tell me what the difference is between Dolby Atmos and Oro in terms of both from the consumer perspective and from the professional's perspective that you guys work with it to create content in? You guys use Oro, and we'll talk about why in a minute, but what are some of the major differences between them, also from the user or the consumer perspective?
I can take this. I'd say the primary difference right now, as it stands, is that it's a channel-based system versus an object-based system.
Though that which is changing. Which?
Atmos is a object-based mixing system and delivery system, and Oro is a channel-based system right now, 11.1.
Okay, and can you describe what an object-based system is in basic?
Sure, an object is essentially any sound that they want to use to pinpoint a location in the room. So if you want something up above you on the left there, that can be considered an object. And what happens is that metadata is recorded with this object that tells the computer where this is placed in the sound field. And then that is rendered on the fly at the location that they're... So depending on the theater, they could have 10 speakers or they could have 100 speakers, and this will be rendered on the fly to those speakers. So as you can see in this shot here, This is the Oro panner. We now have the ability to do objects. See the green light up in the top right there. Any file I come upon on a track, I can click that on automated, and it'll turn into an object, and then pan it around the room, and it'll render that as an object as we're listening to it, and later on in whatever environment you end up at.
Ah, so Dolby Atmos began as an object-oriented system. Oro began as a channel-based system where, correct me if I'm wrong, but in an object-based system, you don't really need to think about, well, this sound needs to go to channel X or channel Y or channel Z. It just needs to go there in the room. Whereas with a channel-based system, you need to think about, well, am I going to channel 3 or channel 7 or channel 11 or wherever? Am I right about that?
Sure. Yeah, that's it in a nutshell. And just to clarify something, Atmos isn't an all object-based system. It's a kind of a hybrid system where you have a 7.1 or even a 9.1 bed with objects, essentially. And that those objects are limited to 128, including the bed tracks, which are 8-channel. So
eight of the 128 channels are already in the bed, as it were. And then you've got 120 or so that you can fly around the room wherever you want.
Sure. Yep. So that's how it is now. And obviously Oro at this point is a channel based system, but we're going to have that ability to essentially do a 13.1 with objects. So we'll have a 13.1 channel based bed. So say dialogue, you don't really need to go crazy with dialogue most of the time to pan around the room. That can go right down the center 90% of the time or more. And then, as you see, there's a multi-channel, six-channel panner.
5.1, yeah.
Lost my train of thought, but
that's all right.
So we're gonna have a 13.1 bed with the ability to pan objects anywhere in the room, and you know, in our room here, we have the ability to do 30.1 essentially.
Right.
Yeah. Why don't you, Chris, describe what the arrays are, the three levels of the arrays and everything like that, which consist what the 13.1 is, because we've talked about this and that, but we really haven't broken it down and what each level is.
I'll start with the 11.1, which
and actually we have a photo of your system in the dub stage. You might want to put up while you're talking about this. You're going to talk about the speaker array, right?
Yeah. Correct. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a photo of the dub stage speakers. That we should be able to find here in a minute. There it is. And
as you see the four on the side that are circled, you have two in the back. This is the one layer, lower layer. And that's one wall, obviously, as well. So we have basically four on the side, two in the back, and then another four on the side, two in the back, and then four or eight channels or eight speakers on the other wall as well. And then we have four Voice of God. See at the top there, those circled four Voice of God speakers.
Mm-hmm. And now this is the Voice of God channel, by the way, just so everyone makes sure we understand, are the speakers that are on the ceiling coming down at you from directly above, thus the name Voice of God. But I think the important point here to make is that you've got two levels of speakers, surround speakers, and even speakers in the front. That picture didn't show that. But you've got a lower level of surround speakers, sides, back, other side, and also in the front. And then you have a layer of or a level of speakers above those, higher on the wall, on the sides, back, and front. And then this Voice of God channel coming at you from directly below, which creates this sense of hemispherical sound field, which you just can't get with 5.1 or 7.1, which is all in one plane.
Exactly. Correct. Think of it as a 5.1, which we're all accustomed to, with a 5.0 above it, with a 0.1, or I would say a 0.1, but a 1 above that. So you have a lower 5.1, you have a 5.0, and then on the very top, you have the Voice of God. And that makes your 11.1. And so behind the screen, we have a left, center, right, where the standard left, center, rights are. And then above that, directly above that, we have an upper left, center, right. And that's the beauty of the Oro system, is the ability to take an element such as music and raise it above the standard left, center, right, where you, for example, in the center speaker, you typically have dialogue, you have music, you have effects, and everything combining into that point, which is not being seen on this picture right now because we're looking at it from the corner here. But if you were to look at the screen itself and take the screen down, you would see six speakers behind it. And one of the beauties of the Oro system is the ability to pan between the lower level and the upper level to pull things up like music and other elements into there and give it a sense of height and clarity. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about the Oro system is that it has those six speakers behind the screen. It allows us to go ahead and spread the sounds across, yet still remember the vast majority of sounds are happening behind the screen or on the screen. And by utilizing this, we're able to get clarity. We're able to have dialogue, have more clarity, more intelligibility. And we're able to still, for example, on music, to take that upper layer of a decatree, which is the way they're recorded in when the conductor is, they mount it behind the microphones behind the conductor, and the scoring mixer goes ahead and records that. And now it allows you to get that type of sense that the conductor is feeling without going ahead and fighting with dialogue and all the other elements within that one center speaker. So it really comes in handy.
You're able to, in essence, separate out those elements so they each have their own space. The dialogue comes from where it needs to be. But as you say, it's not fighting with the music or the sound effects, which are in the same speakers. You can actually move them into a different part of the space and improve the clarity greatly, it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I think it really does. I think that's one of the distinct advantages of the Oro system is that you have not just the traditional left, center, right, but you have the height speakers. And we're able to take things like ambience and even sound effects and everything and maybe position them between the lower level and the upper level or all the way to the very top. And and I think that's what's exciting. Then we're able to bring it out and immerse us with the upper level surrounds into the room. And so you get that full immersive feeling. And the way that the speakers are positioned in the Oro system is they're at the upper layers are at 30 degrees. And through case studies, we found that seems to be to give you the vast, those would be the ones that you see circled at the very top there, not on the ceiling, but off to the side there pointing down.
Sort of in the corners, right between the
way around the room. Right? And that is what goes ahead and gives you the sense of height. And then with the voice of God absolutely on top when it's appropriate, and, you know, you can put sound up there all the time, but we find that it's great for things such as flyovers and treatments. And, for example, in Oz, The Great and Powerful, Oz was speaking to them from in the square there and was the, you know, very opulent, the very, overbearing guy. And we went ahead and put delays and reverb up there, which just gave him an effect that you couldn't get in a traditional 5-1 or 7-1 setting.
I had fireworks going off up there. What else was going on? You know, lots of flyover effects definitely are good for the voice of God.
Yeah, definitely. But as you say,
I was going to say the 13.1 that we're adding is basically a 7-1 bass with the five channels and the voice of God.
Okay. Well, we got a lot more to talk about. And before we do continue, I would like to take a moment to thank one of our sponsors for this episode, which is Hulu Plus. Now, of course, you've probably heard of Hulu.com. It gives you access to lots of streaming content on your computer. But what if you want to watch that content on your tablet or even your smartphone or in your home theater? You really need Hulu Plus because Hulu Plus lets you watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere. In fact, they offer thousands of hit TV shows and movies in your living room or on the go with your smartphone or tablet. You can watch your favorite TV shows like Jimmy Kimmel Live, Family Guy, Saturday Night Live, one of my favorites. You can watch every episode of Lost, of Doctor Who, which is now celebrating its 50th anniversary, and Star Trek, certainly one of the shows that I watch a lot. In fact, I was recently laid up for a couple days, and so I had a lot of time to watch on my iPad, and I caught up on some of my favorite Voyager episodes, which was really cool. Now, I want to show you the app on my iPad, which is right here, and happens to be what we're looking at here is the movie The Red Balloon. I don't know if you've ever seen that before, but it's a very, very beautiful French film about a boy who follows this red balloon floating over Paris. You know, and I just happened upon it as I was looking around Hulu Plus and decided, oh, man, I haven't seen that in years. So I'm going to be watching that one pretty soon. They've even got their own exclusive content that they've produced themselves, like The Wrong Man's and Behind the Mask, which is really an interesting series about those sports mascots that you undoubtedly see if you watch basketball or football. There's somebody in that costume, and this show follows that person. And so I find that really, really interesting. You also get access to a large collection of ad-free movies and children's content. All of this for only $7.99 a month, which lets you catch up on current shows, binge on old favorites, which I just did, or catch a great movie. And you can stream as many TV shows and movies as you want, whenever you want. Now, right now, Hulu Plus is offering a free 2-week trial for Home Theater Geeks viewers and listeners. All you have to do is go to HuluPlus.com/HTG. Now, that's a special offer for our listeners, so I sure hope you take good advantage of it. Make sure to use the URL HuluPlus.com/HTG so you can get that extended free trial and they know that we sent you. And we thank Hulu Plus very much for their support of the TWiT Network and of Home Theater Geeks. And we hope you enjoy watching instantly on Hulu Plus. Okay, so we've been talking a little bit about the difference between Oro and Dolby Atmos. And there was one question in the chat room that I was going to ask myself as well, which is, does Atmos... Oro has two rows of speakers in front and also on the sides and the back. Does Atmos have a height speakers behind the screen? I don't recall if I ever knew that.
No, their configuration is, depending on the size of the theater, is left, center, right behind the screen. And if the screen over 40 feet wide, it has the option of having a left center and a right center. So similar to the old SDDS format where you'd have a left center, center, right center, right. And that's an optional setup, and it's all dependent on the size of the room. That's with Atmos. In Oro, it's the three on top, so that gives you a completely different sound and imaging.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, one of the problems with any new format like Atmos or Oro is the installed base. How many theaters have it? Where can people go and actually experience it? Because we can talk about it till we're blue in the face and get people excited about it. But until they go and experience it, they don't really get it. And so my understanding is that Atmos, the Dolby, has spent a ton of money installing Atmos in a bunch of theaters around the country and around the world. There was a question in the chat room about whether or not this is only U.S. or around the world. And I know that it's around the world, both cases. And they have, but Atmos has more theaters than Oro. Am I right about that?
Atmos has, to the best of my knowledge, and I'm not the complete knowledgeable person, but my understanding is that Atmos has more U.S.-based theaters, where Oro has more world theaters. Right now, there's approximately 40 theaters for, and I'm just looking at my figures here. There's 40 installs in the U.S. 40 installs right now. Cinemark and Regal Cinemark went ahead and agreed to within the next year to install 150, and Regal is putting in within the next year 20. So that's 170 based in the U.S. We just got a notice that in India, a 100 theaters just committed to the Oro, utilizing Oro in India. And which brings back to we did the first Indian immersive mix. Visharumpa here at the dub stage, and it really opened up the theater goers in India who are very passionate about going and seeing their movies, and it was very, very successful, and we're going to be starting up here soon to do the second version of it, Visharumpa 2, and we'll also do that in Oro. We've done at the dub stage, we just recently remixed Ender's Game in Oro. And we've done the first mix we did in Oro was Rise of the Guardians for DreamWorks. And And just about everything that we do here at the dub stage is also mixed in Oro. Right now, it's a question of chicken and the egg. Theaters are going, how many movies do I have? And studios go, how many theaters do we have? So in both these formats, to be fair to everybody, in both these formats, it's very early going. And, I think you're seeing more and more people getting behind it. For example, DreamWorks committed 15 movies to be done in Oro. And no, I didn't say exclusively, but being done in Oro. I'm starting to see more and more theaters, more and more studios going ahead and doing in the formats, which I think is great for the sound. People like us who enjoy sound and the sound community, I think it's a wonderful thing.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the reason that we at the dub stage went ahead and went with Oro from the beginning is we had an opportunity to go with any of the formats. We, from a purely sound base, we felt that it was a much more immersive way of going ahead and mixing. We felt that I really enjoyed the immersive qualities to it. The neat thing about it is, as an independent facility, is that we're able to go ahead buy the software. It all works within our ways of working, which is Pro Tools. It's there is no licensing fees for the movie, for the soundtrack. So these days, when in anything making movies or television, doing sound it's definitely always money is a consideration. And if I'm able to provide my clients with an immersive soundtrack that does not cost them any more money on a licensing basis, it gives us a distinct advantage. And I can't speak highly enough about Oro, Wilfred Van Beelen from Oro, and his support. And the clients who come in here and who've heard it, just like yourself, Scott, are just blown away by the qualities to it. It really fits into the way we work. It's easily utilized, and now with the most recent addition, which is the MDA process of the Oro, Oro with MDA, allows us now to mix objects with our array-based 11.1 or 13.1. For example, mm-hmm. we recently did a 30.1 mix, and I think Chris could better tell you about how we did that, and there's even a graphic showing it. But a 30.1 mix, we have 37 speakers in our room, and what the 30.1 is, the 6 speakers behind the screen, left, center, right, low, left, center, right, high, and then the 24 speakers for the surround, which are 10 lower, 10 upper, and height speakers, and then the 4 voice of guys. So we were able to address any one of those, and Chris ended up making a 30.1 mix, which I'll let him take over and explain about.
Please.
I want to clarify one thing. Taylor Karras, I think, says, I get trying to immerse the audience, but why do that when the sound from the surround speakers already immerse you? Really, in 5.1 and 7.1, it's a 2D environment. It's not 3D because you only have X and Y. You don't have the Z. So I really feel that the Z adds a lot to the immersive sound. And if we can pull up the graphics, we can talk about some of those as well.
Yeah,
by
absolutely.
The way, Z is the height channel. So X and Y is the left, center, right, front to back, and Z is the height channel to be able to
go exactly. Between. Right, exactly. So, and in a traditional 5.1 or 7.1 or 9.1 even, very often, most often, it's in those, all those speakers are in a plane, in a one plane environment, in front of you or to the sides, behind you, but there's nothing above them or that plane. So that's why it's called 2D audio. What Oro and Atmos both do is put speakers above that plane and to create an entire three-dimensional hemispherical sound field. Okay, so Chris, you're going to tell us about this 30.1 mix, which sounds pretty
sure.
awesome.
Sure, I want to point out a couple of the tools that we have here. That one that was just there, is it called Oromatic Pro? It's for upmixing due to using some very complicated algorithms from 5.1 or even mono and stereo up to 11.1 and even 13.1 at this point.
Oh, wow. So that's not unlike converting a 2D picture into a 3D picture, right? I mean, it's synthesizing stuff that isn't there.
Sure. I mean, it's not really synthesizing. It's beyond what I can understand what it can do, actually, to be honest with you. I mean, it's very complicated. And, complicated algorithm behind it. It's not something we use all the time. We tend to like to get all the individual elements and pan them around the room. But when
sometimes you don't.
In cases where you don't have a lot of the original elements, something like this can come in very handy.
For example, for music where you'll have a two-track or a stereo track, like one would find on a CD, and now you need to put it in an immersive environment, you may run it through this process and just kind of open it up and give you the ability to adjust the particular levels of the height or what have you. So it really is nice. Do we run everything through it? No, but it's just one of the things that we have in our tool chest.
Okay. So, Chris, please, continue.
If we can go to the other slides, I can point those out.
Mm-hmm. I forget which what the numbering was. You had numbered them very nicely.
Yeah, I don't remember off the top of my head. Just bring them up. I can tell you.
There we go.
So when I did the 30.1 mix, or we'll call it a Oro plus Objects mix, this is the panner plugin that goes on every track, either mono or stereo versions of it. And we had close to 200 tracks, I believe, in that session. If you can go to the next slide.
So what we're looking at here is basically the panner, which is the object-oriented thing that lets you move an object around the room. And we're looking at the difference between something being in front of the listener and a single object versus something being in the Voice of God channel overhead.
Exactly. That picture right there shows that up above your head.
Right.
And we have four channels available in the Voice of God. So when it's the object green button is on there, I can pan it around to any of those four channels.
So they're not. My understanding of Oro was that the speakers, the four speakers or however many you had serving the Voice of God channel, all got the same thing all the time.
Well, that's in 11.1 and 13.1. But now with the advent of MDA and objects in Oro, we're able to address every speaker individually.
Which is what Atmos has been able to do from the beginning, but now Oro is getting that capability as well. By the way, I should mention, make sure that everybody understands that MDA is a standard developed originally by SRS, which was then acquired by DTS, and is continuing to develop this format called MDA, or multi-dimensional audio, which is an object-oriented audio format. Open source or open license, anyway, that Oro is now incorporating into its system so that you can, in fact, do this object orientation, right?
Yep. Yeah. Oro and DTS are working together along with several other companies. I don't know if I'm at liberty to say which one, so I won't.
Right.
But
good.
There's a group of companies that are working together to develop the standard and to and they're submitting it to SMPTE and various other organizations as well to become a standard open format that anybody can use.
Yeah, yeah, good. So okay, getting back to the pictures here we go. Go ahead, continue.
This is a multi-channel, like maybe I would put that on a reverb, or if we have source tracks, like a music track that is a multi-channel 5.1 track. And as you can see, I can raise them and lower them as a group, or I can individually, each channel, place that wherever I'd like. As well as I can link them together and rotate and do all kinds of crazy stuff. So if you can go to the next slide. We already talked about that one. You can go to the next one. So this is the mixer engine that everything kind of comes together at this, and you have some meters there. Right now, this shows an effects bus. I mean, there's only one bus, but you can have multiple buses, dialogue, music, effects, and even go beyond that. And I'm in a configuration of 13.1. This is the 7.1 plus 5 plus 1.
And you can see that on the right of this picture where you got the little dots, right?
Yep. And so, we can encode within this plugin. We can output objects or an MDA file, which is a file format. And we can go to the next slide.
Here we go.
I don't remember what my next... Oh, there we go. This is just an example of a session that we did with various objects. Not all of these are objects. What's great with the plugin is I can put it on, as you can see, I can put it on every channel, and it'll either go to a bed, or if I click that button, it'll become an object, and that's automatable. So say one file earlier in the session could be on the bed tracks, or 5.1, 7.1, 11.1, 13.1, But then if I hit a button to turn it into an object, then that particular region or clip will become an object.
And you can then pan it around the room wherever you want it.
Yep. Well, in either case, I can really pan it around the room. But when it becomes an object, then I can address every individual speaker rather than an array of speakers.
Got it. Marty, you had something to add there?
Yeah, I think Chris gets paid by the objects, and that's why there's so many objects.
That's like when I was a tuba player in the orchestra, I got paid by the note because there were so few notes.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Anyway, okay. Chris, there was one more graphic I wanted to make sure we took a quick look at, which was the final 30-channel mix.
Yeah, this is the output from the 30.1.
Man. So
just to give you an idea. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Pretty crazy. We got a couple questions in the chat room I want to make sure we get to. Midnight Rider asks, why not use holophonics? It gives you 3D sound without having to use so many speakers.
Because I think everybody would have to wear headphones, wouldn't they?
I would think so. I think holophonics was a headphone-based system. So that would, and you know, we want a communal experience here. We don't want an isolating experience. Although we're going to talk about headphones in just a minute. So let's keep that in the back of our minds here. Rusty Bones asks, does Auro still account for the millisecond delays between speakers?
Yeah, so in our room, we delay each speaker to the mix position so they all arrive at the same time at the mix position. And Marty, if you want to elaborate on that at all.
Yeah, we have a total of 37 speakers, the six behind the screen, the mains, then you have 10 lower, 10 upper, and four Voice of Gods. You have four subwoofers at the front, the LFEs, and then we bass manage the surround. So the left wall, low and high, are bass managed to a dual 12-inch sub, the Voice of God and back wall to a separate dual 12-inch sub, which you'll see those three subs right near the chairs in the front, and then the right wall, low and high, to a dual 12-inch sub. So what that enables us to do is, for example, everything below 60 hertz, because the surrounds are notorious for not going very deep, everything below 60 hertz goes to the subs and are bass managed. So each speaker is then adjusted for a time arrival to the mix position. We have 37 speakers and a total of 27,500 watts of power in the room. And it allows us to hear things. And I mean, the Meyer speakers that we have are just amazing on the clarity, the true dynamics that they have, and the ability to, with the bass managed surround, pull something off the front wall. When I say pull, pan something through the room and keep the same timbre, the same frequency response as the mains as you pull something through. And, Chris and I have been mixing together for years, and it's truly, I think, very advantageous to have a complete bass managed system. And that's a neat thing about both of these systems for both Auro and Atmos is the bass management. So you do get a much better overall sound experience by having the frequency response of the surrounds matching the mains.
Mm-hmm. A couple people in the chat room have asked, is the software that we've been looking at screenshots of available? How does one get it to play with? I think we have some pros in the chat room who might want to start playing around with this.
I believe it is available. That is a question to basically contact Auro directly. I mean, we don't work for Auro. We are helping them out in a lot of ways. We test their software. We give feedback. But it is not our software to sell. So that's something you would have to contact Auro about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just to give you a little background, we were the third facility in the world to incorporate Auro. The first one was in Belgium at the Galaxy Studios where it was invented. The second one was Skywalker Sound in Northern California. We were the first place in Hollywood, Los Angeles, to have the system. And it is now growing in popularity. Recently, Fox Studios put in two rooms. Warner Brothers is putting in a room, and Sony Pictures is putting in a room. So I think you're going to see more movies mixed in the format. In regards to people wanting to utilize it, it is based within Pro Tools, so you'd have to obviously have a Pro Tools system utilize it. And the plugins are you can purchase them as part of a package. As for the costs and what's involved in that, obviously you need the appropriate amount of speakers, but I think, like Chris says, it's best to contact Auro directly to mm-hmm. see what it would cost for a person to go ahead and mix in that format.
I don't know if you mentioned this or not, but I just want to make sure everybody understands that each of those speakers in your room is self-powered. It has the amplifier for it built into the cabinet, so you don't have to have any separate power amplifiers. Everything's totally self-powered, right. And that 27,500 watts or whatever the number was is the culmination of all of those individual amplifiers within each of those speakers.
Correct. Each speaker is self-powered. Each speaker has built-in crossovers. We utilize a system called QSC QSIS as a monitor system, which allows us to address equalization, volume, soloing if we needed to. When I put out the system, when I set up the system, I made sure that each speaker had a home run. In other words, each speaker can be addressed either as an array or as an individual speaker, and that we can do that within QSIS. So if we wanted to mix in 5-1 someday, let's say a movie came in or a TV show came in, we could hit a button, mix in 5-1, which is an array-based way we go. If somebody came in and wanted to mix 11-1, we hit the button. Within 1 second, we're in 11.1 and can address each speaker. And if we went ahead and did Oura with MDA, where it's object-based with the beds, we can hit another button within 1 second, and away we go in that. So each speaker has a direct feed to it. Each speaker is self-powered, and it can be utilized as both an array and a solo object speaker.
And so the QSC QSIS is essentially your processor that is feeding all the speakers.
It's a monitor controller. The processing is truly done for Oura within the plugins. It's not like a typical processor that you'll see at home that does its decoding and everything like that in a receiver or something. This is strictly for the monitor that does time delay, does any type of bass management, does calibrated monitoring, does metering, and all that kind of stuff. It was something that we can just customize. It's available through QSC that we're able to customize, and we're the first facility to have that. And really, it's the heart of our system and enables us to do things even remotely with an iPhone or an iPad app to address any of the things that we utilize.
Well, somebody mentioned headphones earlier, and this is the subject of our last bit of conversation. We got a few minutes left. But before we get into that, I would like to take a moment to thank our other sponsor for this episode, which is Tonks Coffee. Now, I know many home theater geeks, listeners, and viewers are coffee aficionados, if not, in fact, addicts. And if you are, you really should know about Tonks. It's a small company made up of a tight-knit group of coffee experts who really believe that that everyone deserves a great cup of coffee. And really, who doesn't believe that, huh? And everyone can brew a great cup of coffee right in their kitchen if you have the right beans. That is the key. The most important thing is to have quality, fresh roasted beans. Now, Tonks sources their beans from the growers directly, roasts them, and ships them within 24 hours of roasting, so you get the freshest beans you can find. Now, it's really good coffee, and Tonks' Twitter feed is a testament to that. I think we can all make that claim very easily. As I said, the beans are shipped within 24 hours of roasting, and home-brewed coffee can be just as good as that from your favorite cafe and cost a whole lot less. It's not as hard as the baristas make it out to be, but it all starts with those fresh beans, which you can't get if you buy your beans in a grocery store, you know, and pre-ground coffee is even worse. You know, great coffee actually has not too much to do with fancy gadgets and expensive gizmos. It's the beans that count. Now, Tonks is very convenient. It's a biweekly subscription service that automatically sends you the best beans on earth directly to your door for the price of a few visits to the cafe. If you're hitting that cafe most mornings, this is a much better and more economical way to get great coffee. And they offer plenty of great help, too, on the best brewing methods and equipment. As I said, they source directly from their growers, and because of their extensive relationships, they can follow the tilt of the earth and select the best beans from wherever they are in the world when they're at their peak. This is a great gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Why not get them a great cup of coffee every morning? And Tonks cares about the experience that their customers have, and they are available to help with any brewing questions as well as offering tips and advice. Now, if you fancy yourself a coffee connoisseur or you just love coffee, you need to try Tonks. These guys are fanatical about delivering the best beans in the world. And every 2 weeks, you can get a new batch from somewhere in the world, and they'll be incredible and roasted to perfection. Tonks is subscription only, and they're offering a free sample to our listeners. So be sure to visit tonks.org/HTG to get some for yourself and check it out. That's tonks.org/HTG. We hope you'll visit there today. And we thank Tonks Coffee for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the entire TWiT network. Okay, so I want to make sure we talk about headphones. Now, very recently, in fact, last week, I believe, DTS was visiting the dub stage and doing some recording in your studio. Marty, tell us what's going on there. What does this have to do with headphones?
It's very, very exciting. They came out and with some proprietary recording equipment. They were basically took a sonic fingerprint of the dub stage, which included all an 11.1 speaker layout and captured the overall sonic qualities of the dub stage and are able to play that back within a standard stereo headset. And I have to say, I was just amazed. And we able to A-B between 11.1 mix and then what we heard in the headphones and where it was coming from the speakers. And it was astonishing. I can't elaborate because of the technical details and the NDA that we've signed. But I think you will find that the dub stage will be, we'll just call it a preset, that you can listen through your movies or what have you. In a mobile situation on your phone or tablet and get that true immersive playback that like you would find at the dub stage. It was remarkable. And
now what we're talking about here is Headphone X. I want to make sure everybody understands that DTS has this technology called Headphone X, which we've talked about on this show before. I had Fred Kitson, the CTO of DTS, on some time ago, a few months ago, to talk about Headphone X. And what it is it basically simulates the sound of a surround speaker system in a conventional, normal, regular old, any pair of headphones will do. And one thing that they do with Headphone X is that they create profiles of specific listening rooms. And so that's really what they were doing here, was creating a profile of the dub stage room, the main room there where you do all your work. And when you listen back to a multi-channel mix of something, you can hear it as if you were hearing it on the dub stage. Chris, you were involved in this project as well, were you not?
Yes. Yeah, initially, I mean, we've only heard an initial, you know, rough idea of what it's going to sound like, but I was pretty blown away to be able to perceive every speaker, every location of speaker. You know, it's one of those things where it helps that we're in the room and we're facing forward. If you're maybe at home in your living room and you listen to it, it might not work quite as well. It's one of those things where it's a psychology thing, I think, that that helps.
Psychoacoustic thing.
Yeah,
maybe.
Psychoacoustics, exactly.
But did you get the sense? I've gotten the sense listening to Headphone X that remarkably, it sounds like what you're listening to. You've got these headphones, you've got these drivers sitting right on your ears, and yet it sounds like you're listening to speakers that are many feet away. Did you get that sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was amazing. I was blown away. I had to take the headphones off and check that it was not coming out of the speakers. That's how realistic it was.
I've done that too during Headphone X demos. Exactly.
It's pretty remarkable. Just like Chris said, we would A-B between what we heard in the room and then what we're hearing in the headphones. It was truly remarkable where you could pinpoint where things are coming from.
Yeah. And I think what the process that you undergo there is you stick some sort of dummy head, probably a very expensive, carefully modeled dummy head with very carefully modeled ears with microphones in them, and you play stuff on your speaker system, and it records it and encodes it in some way in their process, such that when you play back other music, it takes on the acoustic characteristics of where the speakers are in the room, the acoustic characteristics of the room itself, and so on. Have I got that about right?
Something like that.
NDA.
roughly.
Roughly.
You know, but
we've come a long way before. I mean, years ago, I heard a guy who brought in some binaural head recordings of a guy cutting, scissors going around your head and everything like that. And it was a novelty. But what I was hearing in this process is truly sounds like it's playing in the room. And what's amazing is you just feel like you have headphones on, but you're listening through the headphones, and you're hearing the room. Then you take the headphones off, and you realize there's nothing coming out of the speakers. It's only coming out of the headphones. And it's truly remarkable. And I think for mobile applications, we'll see more and more of this type of playback coming.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, I assume DTS is working on capturing other rooms as well. And I assume that at some point, you guys aren't from DTS, so I probably can't answer this question. But I'm assuming that eventually you'll be able to get the DTS headphone X app and say, okay, I want to listen to this music as if I were in the dub stage or as if I were at Sony or some other room.
I think that seems to be the plan, I guess. I can't speak for them, but it only makes sense that it's a natural progression. And since we have an 11.1 immersive room here that is unique, they were able to come in and capture that essence. And to me, it's outstanding. Very, very nice.
So the final question I have for you is the Oro and Atmos, but we'll talk about Oro, are currently implemented in commercial cinemas. And we hope, and from what you've said, more and more will be coming online. And I'm only very glad for that because I want people to make sure that they go and experience it. But how likely is it that we're going to get Oro in the home, in a home, the home version of the game, in any time soon? Because I know that a lot of people on AVS Forum, where I work, people are always asking, well, when can I get this at home? We talked about the spousal acceptance factor and how difficult it would be to, say, oh, hey, honey, I'm going to put some speakers on the ceiling and two rows of speakers around the room. But can we expect it anytime soon?
Well, like I said at the beginning of this, I went to the AES and went to the 4K, what the future is of 4K television. And they basically had a 9.1 setup. And I can't speak for Oro or Atmos or whatever happens going down the road, DTS or what have you, on what's going to go in the home. But they, being the AES, were basing the future on what they thought the home would probably be a 9.1 system. So I don't know what's going to go to the ceiling. In what they showed of photographs and discussions to deliver content, television content, it was 9.1. So what the above companies that I mentioned are going to do in the future, I don't know. I'm not privy to that. We mix. We have the ability to mix for just about any format under the sun and configuration under the sun, and we're going to keep going that direction. And whatever is adopted, we will go ahead and adapt to what we need to make it work so that it transfers to future environments. Because I think the investment these days for a motion picture, they want to hit all the markets. I don't think there's any doubt about it. The first place that's, we want to put people in the seats in the theaters, and that's the first focus that we have. And then everything else after that would obviously be a natural progression, would be the home, mobile devices, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Now, I believe Datasat has announced Oro decoding in their, in a box, I guess, that's upcoming. And I believe there's another one.
The preamp processor that they sell to the home now, Datasat's been well used in commercial cinemas. Now they're starting to get into the home market as well. And they have a preamp processor called the RP20i. Somebody in the chat room can correct me if I'm wrong.
I think you're right.
It's either RP or RS. I can't remember. Anyway, they're going to include Oro in that box. Storm Audio is another company that has announced Oro in their preamp processor. So maybe it's closer than we might think. So that could be good news for the home. But I think, Marty, your point is exactly right, that you want to get the studios and the theater owners certainly want to get people in those seats. And I've always known that they need to offer something that you can't get at home in order to get people to go out to the movies. So, and this may very well be one of those things.
Exactly. That's exactly it. We need to give them that's why a well calibrated theater to mimic what we do here on the dub stage or other dub stages, so that the audience can go ahead and hear all the effort that we put together. I'm all for it, and I think it's a natural progression. Get them in the seats, get it accepted, and then I think we'll see it hit all the other markets.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thank you both so much for being here. Marty Humphrey and Chris Jacobson from the Dub Stage, helping us understand the Oro 3D surround system. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank you, Scott. No, we really appreciate it.
You bet. For more information, you can always go to their website, thedubstage.com. You can find me at avsforum.com. You can email me at scott@twit.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott and also at avsforum. You can also find previous episodes of Home Theater Geeks right here on twit.tv/htg and on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/twit/HomeTheaterGeeks. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be Steve Guttenberg, noted audio reviewer who's been on the show before. And we're going to be talking about the difference between sound systems optimized for music and movies. A very important question that many home theater owners ask. And I hope to provide some clarity on that question with Steve. And so I do hope you will join me. Until then, geek out.